Welcome to the Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 27, for real, this time. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt. You can't have too many episode 27s.
I know, it's a good number.
Yeah.
It's a good number. What can we do? We have a great episode today that we have one of our favorite authors, Daniel Suarez, on the show. And that is super exciting, but we'll get to that in just a little bit.
I would almost say that his sequel, Freedom TM, is sort of an alternate selection. If you've already read the book that we're doing next, Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom by Cory Doctorow, then read Freedom TM.
Down and Out is a relatively short book compared
to
the other types.
It is, too. Yeah, you could definitely do both.
So I finished it last week, so I'm ready to go. I'm ready to start with Freedom TM. I don't have my copy yet, but I will get my hands on it very soon and hopefully go through it pretty quickly.
After Mists of Avalon, reading Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom was kind of crazy. You're like,
I was like, it's done? What?
I'm halfway through. I now just picked it up.
It's a miracle, a Christmas miracle.
Exactly.
We hadn't officially announced it yet, but as we said on the website, you can get Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom for free through a lot of different channels. That's one of Cory Doctorow's big points for this book, is that, you know, you should be able to get it anywhere. So definitely check that one out.
Yeah, and if you want to read it on the Kindle, which I did, he doesn't have it in the Amazon store in a Kindle edition because they won't sell it without DRM. And so he said, look, when you want to sell it without DRM, you can sell it all you want, but it has to be without DRM. So if you go to his website and look in the large list of all the different formats he provides for free, there is an Amazon formatted version that you can get there.
I did that one, and it worked okay, except I think there was a few paragraphs that may have been dropped out.
Oh, really? I haven't noticed that, but I'm not finished yet either, so.
It was right towards the beginning. All of a sudden, a paragraph ended in a very weird way, like mid-sentence.
Yeah.
So, who knows? But I don't think I missed too much of the story because of that.
We don't have too much news, too many quick burns for you this month, because we do want to get right to talking to Daniel Suarez about Freedom TM. But just some movie news, actually. Star Trek, the sequel, gets a year anyway. It's going to come out in 2012. And Spider-Man 4, if you're interested, scrapped. They're going to actually go and reboot it and start him in high school. And Sam Raimi is off the project.
Wow. That's pretty nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Why do you think that is? I didn't see the most recent one.
Sam
Was it that
Raimi,
bad?
No. Actually, Spider-Man 3 got mixed reviews in some cases, but a lot of people really liked it. Sam Raimi just said, I can't creatively get this done by the date you want me to get it done with. So they said, you know what? No worries. Let's just reboot. They had another script already in hand from I guess some sort of earlier effort that had Spider-Man still in high school. And so they said, we'll just give it to another director and go from there. And I don't know if there's bad blood or not. It didn't seem like it. It seemed like everybody was like, yeah, that's fine. We won't have a Spider-Man 4. But a lot of Spider-Man fans sort of disappointed with that.
Ouch, though. I mean, that's got to be somewhat of a disappointment for Sam Raimi.
Yeah. Well, unless maybe he's got something else secretly lined up. There's rumors that he's going to do the Warcraft movie.
Woohoo! Oh, hey, I do have to correct you, though. According to Zachary Quinto's Twitter account, there is an actual date, June 29th, 2012.
Date. Awesome. That's the day after my birthday. That's perfect.
So I'm going to go get in line now.
You'll need something to read, and so you're already finished with our book for next time. So check out Fantasy and Science Fiction Magazine. They've joined forces with Suvudu Random House's science fiction site to offer free fiction online.
Ah, excellent.
You can check out some great short stories in the science fiction and fantasy genre, which is perfect for the Sword and Laser audience, by going to that website. Thanks to Io9 for passing that along.
Short stories, though, that concerns me. That's not going to take up enough time. I should maybe go pick up the Mist of Avalon prequels.
Yeah, if you're going to be waiting in line for 2 years, that's probably a good idea.
Okay. Well, we should just jump right to the interview then. Take a listen. Joining us today is Daniel Suarez, author of Demon and Freedom TM. Thank you so much for joining us, Daniel.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We were huge fans of the first book, and Tom has gotten a chance to read Freedom TM already. I have not yet, so no spoilers.
Yeah, okay. I won't give any spoilers.
Not too many spoilers.
But I totally, at the very end... Okay, never mind.
My favorite part was at the very end when I did this.
One question that we should probably start off with that I know a bunch of people in the audience are going to want to know, and it's a question I'm sure authors are always getting when they have such strong characters like a Matthew Sobel. How much of yourself is Matthew Sobel?
So how much of myself is in a megalomaniacal person who's trying to take over the earth?
Not exactly.
Too much. And I suppose if the book becomes really popular, everybody would get nervous when I die.
Totally. But,
not much. It's really the story, the genesis of it came out not so much in the person of Sobel, but in the situation. And the whole idea for the first book, Demon, came out actually from a software product that I created years ago, and I guess gamers will appreciate this. I originally did a software product called Weathermaster, which created fictional weather for role-playing games. And I did this back, I think it was probably 1999. I coded it, put it on the web, and I put an encryption wrapper around it. It was a license wrapper. I can't remember the name. I think it was called SoftLocks. And what it did was, you know, you could download it, try it for 30 days. And if you wanted to buy it, you know, order it online, and the money would automatically go into an account, be swept into an account. And that account would be swept occasionally to pay for the website and to pay for advertising. Mm-hmm. And I realized at some point, if I kick the bucket, this thing's going to continue because there's really nothing to stop it. And then I started thinking, well, what else could I do if I was dead? And that led to a series of things that I started to realize, you know, very little of your capabilities are gone when you're dead in modern society. You can still do quite a bit. And that's really how Sobel was created. He was an assemblage of possibilities, really, so much as a character.
The tech in your books is all very real and very possible. Why, in your opinion, do we not see these kind of things happening right now?
Well, I think you do see them to some degree if you're looking. And I would say botnets are a great indication of that. I've been in several interviews where people have said, I've been on television before, where people will ask me, is the Conficker worm going to destroy us all? And I would always say, no, I don't think it is, because it's not in the interests of these parasitic organisms to destroy the host. So I think, do you see them? I think you do. But as in the books, the demon doesn't destroy the world. It doesn't destroy the system. It changes it. And I think that's really what we're going to be seeing a lot is these sort of beneath the surface events happening where we are vying against some rather considerable parasitic organisms, digital parasitic organisms, for control of our society. And I think a growing portion of our society will be wrestling with that in a very real way. Banks come to mind. I think they're constantly under assault. And I think most of those publicly held companies are not going to be reporting break-ins and losses because that's going to hurt their stock. So mm-hmm. I do think big parts of it are happening, but it's not widely discussed outside of where those events are happening.
And it's not all created by one central dead megalomaniacal
guy. Exactly. As a matter of fact, a lot of these botnets are variants. Well, yeah, exactly. And probably the most successful botnets are ones that nobody sees because they don't detect them. They can't eradicate them. And as you said, Tom, they're variants on each other. So it's a constant evolution. So it's very much like the natural world.
Now, one thing that I found really interesting in both books is how you go from kind of painting one side, the demon at the beginning, as being sort of the bad guy, and you're trying to, you know, trying, and then slowly it turns out, well, the demon isn't quite so bad, and then it turns out that that maybe the demon is the good guy, and that there's this other bad guy, and then there's a good guy on the bad guy side, and going back and forth, which always makes for interesting fiction. But the demon's followers, especially in Freedom, you see this a little bit in Demon, seem to be largely free of internal strife against each other. Am I wrong in that, or
well, you know, why, you are generally right. And I would say that you probably see this in the early stages of any organization. You're probably going to see, especially when they're struggling against a really powerful foe that they have to band together. Would that be the case if and when they defeat their enemies and suddenly are in a situation where they can start to chart their own course? I would imagine it would then fracture into several different factions. But the idea of the continuing evolution of that system, in this case the Darknet, is hinted at in the second book especially, that the system is changing. And I would imagine over time it would start to change in several different directions. The trick with the Darknet is that you cannot easily attack or affect other network members. You can't use network resources to mount an attack on, you know, within the network. So would that change in later? Possibly.
Has the apparent recovery of our economy saddened you a little bit, since so much of Freedom TM hinges on the bad economy?
I love it when people ask me this question. No, it hasn't, because after all, you know,
saddened isn't the right word.
Well, this is it. I look at this. See, my answer is probably not going to thrill you either. I'm not entirely surprised by this what I would term a short-term recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because I don't think any of the fundamentals have changed. I have for some time been alarmed by the fact that America doesn't make a lot. You know, our manufacturing base took off for cheaper locations. And when you don't manufacture things, when an increasing portion of our economy is basically creating nothing, and I think largely of, for instance, automated trading, this high-frequency, high-volume trading that I addressed somewhat in the beginning of the sequel. The idea that you would trade stocks every few seconds really just ignores the idea of creating value in exchange for trying to play the margins. You know, that's 73% of the volume on Wall Street. And look what happens with the credit default swaps. All of this activity that's really not creating anything is really the biggest industry in America. And just from a pure physics point of view, a conservation of matter view, you really can't create something out of nothing.
And so, when you're saying creating nothing, you're not even talking about like Hollywood and movies and services.
No,
you're talking about
totally
fictional.
Them. Yeah. I'm talking about financial instruments that return no value to anyone. Really, ultimately, at the end of the day, nothing new is created. So I would view a film that's creating entertainment. It is a physical object. People go see it. They spend money while they're there. But a lot of these behind the scenes financial instruments really are creating debt, and debt ultimately has to be paid off. And I don't think anyone would argue that this recent upswing in the economy, I mean, it's largely focused on the stock market. Now, there's still a great deal of pain across the country in the middle class and in unemployment, and the amount of debt that this country holds is actually quite higher than it was last year. Mm-hmm. It was already high then. So, yeah, I look at this uptick as a temporary thing until we change the fundamentals. And I think we're going to head into another rough patch. So there I'm on record saying that. Am I thrilled about that? No. Would it be good for book sales? Well, if we're in a depression, I don't think my books will sell too well either. So I'm not
right,
looking forward to that.
You need people to be able to afford to buy them.
That's correct. That's correct. Although I will point out that books are a good value, entertainment-wise. But yes, it's not something I look forward to, but I am viewing this as a temporary uptick in the economy, and I think that we'll start to head down into a trough again.
Now, one thing I found really interesting that you use as a technique, stories, and I'm thinking a little bit of say the Baroque cycle or something like that, where mm-hmm. you see a lot of examples of the con man using his own anonymity or her anonymity to fool people into thinking they're somebody they're not, either a lord or an official or a policeman or something like that. And I noticed you sort of use the reverse of that. Where the lack of anonymity allows the con, or maybe con's not the right word, but the example I'm thinking of particularly from Freedom is Loki cursing the line cutter's data because he's basically not anonymous. You're able to use this ubiquitous lack of an anonymity to go after him, and yet Loki remains anonymous to that guy. Why don't we usually see, or will we start to see, more rampant exploitation of that fact that any system is vulnerable to this?
Yeah, I think we will see it. I really do. And I don't know if you've read much David Brin, but I remember his book, Transparent Society, really struck me, the idea that privacy is a thing of the past. And I do think it is, especially when our society, modern society, is run on information systems. I mean, you think of the power that something like your FICO score has over your future, your opportunities, you know, your credit score. That requires that people know who you are as you go about your daily business, and they harvest that information to know who to market to and so forth. So lack of anonymity is really, I mean, you just try to go through life now not having your identity known in most transactions. It's very difficult.
Well, I mean, certainly that's kind of par for course on the internet these days, though. What do you think
anonymity on the internet? I don't think there is any. You may think you have it, and even with proxies. I mean, look what happens when somebody does a horrible worm like Slammer. I mean, they eventually find the guy. Of course, in his case, he was bragging online, I think. But I do think you can trace everything from IP addresses. I mean, you have to be quite sophisticated not to have somebody triangulate who you are. Now, it can be done, but it's difficult. For the average person, it can't be done.
And do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it doesn't really matter whether I think it's good or bad. I don't think our privacy is coming back. And I think the best we can hope for is transparency. And I think I addressed this somewhat in the darknet, not as a solution, but as what I think might be around the bend, that is, and what we might shoot for, which is transparency. That is, whenever anyone or anything touches your data, you're aware of it. You know who it is. Because if we're all transparent to each other, whenever we touch each other's data or you know, carry out actions on each other's data, we know who's doing it. That is a more level playing field. And okay. It keeps things running in our society. Right now, we're in a situation where your data goes places. You have no idea where it's going.
Right, and that's actually what allows Loki to get away with that in that scene in the book, is that guy has no idea how to get at that information.
And even if he does, he won't know that data is being accessed. And, of course, you know, we're talking cryptically, but there is a scene in the book where mobile equipment identifiers are used, and these are these cell phone mobile equipment identifiers. These are tracked every few seconds over time. That data never goes away, and so you can get a sort of a geospatial history of every single user in an area who's come in and out of that area with their cell phone. You can see who's calling whom, but also who's gathering and where. And this data is paradoxically used by the demon when it was set up to be used by people like the major. Mm-hmm. So you see it cuts both ways.
Right.
It wound up hurting them. And that's what I think is really the issue for me, that this data really needs to be transparent for everyone. And you look at cameras, for instance, surveillance cameras in places like, well, every major city. The idea that those cameras and those images would be made available to everyone is troubling to people. But at the same time, those cameras are there. And I think it was in London, they discovered that they really don't prevent crime.
Hmm.
And so then the question is, and I think they said that 1%, or maybe it's less, of the crimes that were solved right in full view of these cameras were solved. And then it makes you question, well, why are we going through this tremendously invasive technology if it's really not changing the situation in terms of crime?
I think they found that in Oakland as well, where they put the cameras in and crime was depressed for a short period of time until people realized, there's no consequence here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then you wonder, well, okay, then what are they for? Why do we have them? So, you know, to me, the idea of anonymity, I think it's gone. But if we're all seeing the same thing, if it's a level playing field and we can all see each other, and that's including companies, mm-hmm. then I'm less troubled by it.
I'm with you there because, I mean, seriously, think about it. We go outside and walk to the restaurant and we don't get upset about our lack of anonymity. Everybody can see us walking down the street to get our lunch. And we accept that because it's a level playing field. Everybody can see everything else and we know what the rules are. And so sort of, you know, when you extend that into the internet, and right now we have this imbalance, but if it gets to the point where everybody can kind of know everybody else's data, maybe there's some equilibrium that happens there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, again, a level playing field, and I think that's the best we can hope for in a modern society because data runs modern society, and that means data has to constantly be gathered. Mm-hmm. So it's really a trade-off. We need to get the benefits, and we'll have some drawbacks, but they need to level out for everybody. So that was a long answer to your question, I know.
No, that's good.
No, that's great, yeah. In Demon, everything the demon did is theoretically possible with existing technology, as we mentioned earlier. In Freedom TM, though, you expand that to the existing social and political realities. Would you say that it was harder to expand beyond technology and keep that tie to reality still?
I don't think it was harder because I really envisioned these two books as one complete story way back in 2004, so I knew where I was heading. Bear in mind that I've worked for about 10 years in developing logistics systems for very large companies, and I have for a long time looked at the physical layout of modern society, the United States in particular, as a system. I mean, people themselves don't choose where mini marts are and supermarkets. These are algorithms that examine demographic patterns, economic patterns, road networks, and they determine where those businesses are going to be. And the distribution system grows out of that. So it's almost like a genetic algorithm in a way. Somebody writes an algorithm that determines the best location for a business that gets put into use, and it radically alters the landscape. So I really view our modern society as a continuation of the same network systems that handle data. So it wasn't that big a leap to me, because network systems are, I think, by their very nature, political. And if you look at the type of network we're building, and you know, if we say we are a democracy, one would expect that we would have a distributed system where power is distributed. And I think the network we're building to run our society doesn't really do that. It is concentrating power in certain choke points. And that's one of the big concerns I have.
Would choosing a leader be done better by choosing it as a system administrator versus the way we do it now?
Did you picture that? You know, 2100, America's system administrator is a big election. Forget the president, right? Now, that's interesting. I think one of the things that I put into the darknet that is a little different is that no single person is in charge.
Mm-hmm. Well, except maybe the demon itself could be considered in charge, but
it's
a benevolent
dictator. It's evolving as long as a critical mass of people get together with sufficient levels and reputation to say we're going to alter this you know the critical infrastructure component. So there is an evolutionary mechanism. Certainly, some people are more power users than others, and Loki comes to mind, but. It's a little different. It's a little different than centralization.
What's the appeal of some of these super capable things that you make use of these in both books, like the Ford S650 or just TrueCrypt? You know, the ability to use this really high level encryption for free. And I'm not talking about the book here so much, but it's just in general, people love to have this stuff that's like way more capable than is necessary probably for their own situation. And it turns out being very useful if all of a sudden something like the demon happens, right? But why do you think we love this kind of stuff?
Because we're nerds.
Oh, over design. I mean, I think of various toys that I buy technology-wise that are so completely over designed for what they're really needed. I don't know. I don't know whether that's some sort of instinct for self-preservation gone awry. I don't know what it is, but we definitely, especially in America, we drive cars and vehicles that really are far more over-designed for what they needed, which is typically driving 10 or 15 miles to the office every day. SUVs come to mind, but...
Yeah, some people's cars are bigger than their actual apartments.
Yeah, you don't need a Hummer H2 in San Francisco. I'm sorry.
No,
just
yeah,
not
it would
necessary.
It would be ridiculous. Yeah, well, I've never been an SUV person myself, but I don't know. I think of everything from shoes. I remember people walking around in cities with boots all the time, and I'm thinking, boots? Why are we walking around with boots? But on and on. Our phones. I mean, what fraction of the features do you use on your smartphone? I mean, I really find myself walking around with just a simple phone. I have like 3 PDA-type smartphones, and I don't really use them all the time because they're heavy. The battery life is pretty bad. And I don't use, but a fraction of the features. I'll get email on them. But it does give us flexibility. Maybe that's why we do it.
It's always fun when you can download an app and then sniff around the network and find your friend Rafe Needleman's computer and see his IP address. It's not necessarily useful, but it also could...
You can do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's that you can do it. And then I think there's a part of this like depression era mentality that is now woven into our psyche that it could come in useful, down the road.
Well, yeah, actually, I know a guy, as an older guy, I will not mention his name, but he grew up in the Depression. He's worth many millions of dollars, and he occasionally will go dumpster diving. to look for medals.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking, that's like a mania. That's like, really? You know,
yeah.
You drive up in your $100,000 Mercedes, get out and start going through a dumpster file behind a factory. It's like, well, I guess, you know, that has a dramatic impact, the depression on people.
My dad never threw anything out, and he was always like, well, it could come in handy. And those few times when somebody needed, you know, an L-shaped piece of metal that was 12 inches by 3 inches, and he had it was huge victory. Like, see, I knew I should keep this around.
I think it's just something inherent to geeks as well. We always like to go over the top in terms of features and stuff that we can get in our gadgets that we probably will never use and don't need, but we just like to have them.
Well, yeah, and I guess I still have every cell phone I've ever purchased. Why?
I do too.
I don't know why.
Yeah, it's hard
I array them like a little mini museum, ever shrinking.
Well, I do that with actual computers.
Oh, I should have done that with my Amstrad. I had an Amstrad way back when. And
oh,
I think
yeah.
If you wrote a document, it would require 2 disks to hold
it. Uh-huh.
See, yeah. I should have kept that.
Start your own computer museum. All right. Final question, getting back to the story. Tell me what you think. I if this was intentional or not, but I definitely saw a parallel to Man of La Mancha in the Sebek and Price pairing in Freedom TM. And spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't read Demon, but one character does come back and he gets paired up with another.
Man of La Mancha. I assure you, I wasn't thinking of that at the time. Although
Price
an
is sort of Sancho Panza and
tilting at windmill.
Yeah. Well, and again, they're not necessarily tilting at windmills, but it's sort of, it feels like maybe they think they are at certain points.
Well, you know, one thing to consider is that there really is no central hero in the book, second book especially, that, you know, and I don't want to do spoilers here either, so I'm going to try to carefully step around this. How can I phrase this? Think how the story would be different. The outcome would be different had those heroes not done what they did. And it might not have been different at all. And really, a lot of what I'm trying to say in this book is the idea that we never know who's going to have the answers, who's going to rise up and handle the problem, and so we really need to empower our society collectively to solve our problems. And you look at the open source movement, things like that on the net culture, it's really less about single great individuals, and it's more about the swarm, you know, the mob of people who will tear apart any problem and solve it, and you never know who it's going to be. But somewhere out there, somebody's got the answer.
Well, yeah, on the one end, you've got the butterfly flapping its wings idea, where if that one person isn't there, nothing ever happens. But on the other hand, there's the strange attractor or the wisdom of the crowds or this idea that, you know, things just self-organize.
Yep.
So real fast, I'm curious, do you have any time to read anything else these days, or are you just completely focused on the books that you've worked on and publicizing your works?
Well, I do. I find myself reading a lot of nonfiction now because I'm doing research for an upcoming project. But when I read fiction, it's largely to enjoy myself. And there's a few books that I'm going to go back and read now. I waited to read them because people would say, hey, you know, your book reminds me of this, like Charles Stross, Halting State. And I thought, oh, I wanted to read that, but I figured I'd better finish the sequel first because I didn't want it to in any way taint anything I was doing. If somebody told me that I was writing somewhat about some of the same ideas, I figured I'm just going to finish what I'm going to say and then go back and read it. So I'm looking forward to reading some more Charles Stross. But, you know, Neal Stephenson, of course, I'm a big fan of his. William Gibson. And, you know, how do you say this? China Mayville? Is that how you say his name? Perdido Street Station?
That's funny. That was one of our picks for one of our next books because we were doing the top 20 from io9.com. And that was the second book that was chosen after Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom by Cory Doctorow.
Okay. Yeah, and I haven't read that yet either. But the China, he does this great job of just weaving, casting a spell, basically, this entire vibrant city that feels so alive. He's really great at atmosphere. It's just very impressive. But good Lord, I mean, I read John Dos Passos, Michael Pollan, people like that. I have diverse tastes, fiction for pleasure and nonfiction for research very often, although sometimes that's pleasurable too.
Well, if you want an excuse to read Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, this is actually the episode where we're announcing that as our next book.
Oh,
so
cool.
You could just join in on the Sword and Laser Book Club and dive in.
I will do that because, you know, I am not just a writer, I'm a reader. So
fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people follow your work online?
Yeah, okay, on my website, www.thedaemon.com. That's thedaemon.com. Or Daemon, if you prefer to pronounce it that way. But that's where you'll find information about both books. And also I have a Daemon tech feed where I point out some things that are happening that people might be interested in, how technology might relate to their lives. So thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Daniel. It's a pleasure. Love the books. Love both books to death. And really happy to have a chance to sit down and talk to you about this.
Oh, likewise. Thanks a lot.
Thanks again to Daniel for joining us today. That was a great interview.
Yeah, it was really fun talking to him. I wish we had more time to just chat, but we kind of had to let the guy go. You know, he's busy.
Very, very smart. Very, very smart. I can see how, you know, he pulled together all these really high-level concepts for the books.
It's really impressive and well done. So not only smart, not only up to date on a lot of technology and news and political science, but also able to weave it together into an interesting story. That takes talent.
You know, I did want to ask him. He mentioned that he likes Dungeons and Dragons, but I wonder if he plays Warcraft or what other video games he plays, because they do talk about a lot of different games like that within the book.
Yeah, there's an MMORPG theme to both books. So, yeah. We'll have to email him.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to check out the website, it's swordandlaser.com. And, of course, the Gmail address is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. And we also have a Twitter account, Sword and Laser.
And don't forget our partner StickerFoo. Use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off any of the stickers at StickerFoo. That's StickerFoo.com.
And if I sound like crap again in this episode, I am wearing the headset at the office. I am not at my wonderful podcasting station at home. So I'm sorry.
No apologies necessary.
I'm sorry. It makes me sad as an audio person. I get really sad when I'm the one that sounds like crap.
I have a tin ear, so I can't tell.
Ah, excellent. All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
One question first, though. Something that I've been curious about. Do you say Freedom TM or do you just call it Freedom? How should we?
I do say Freedom TM. Okay. And that's because of the commentary that the trademark symbol. You know, it's funny. A couple people have emailed me to say, you know, it's ridiculous that you would trademark the word Freedom. And I said, well, hold on. That's not what I actually did. But I'm glad I got a reaction from you. And when I initially said this to my publisher, he kind of looked at me and said, can we do that? Can we put the trademark symbol next to Freedom? I said, well, if I get sued by somebody for using the word Freedom, I don't think you can get better publicity than that.